Okay, well, it's 90 minutes roughly
yeah.
before showtime, and I'm in Ryan Malloy's dressing room at the Prince Edward Theatre, where he's about to begin his nightly transformation into Frankie Valli.
Yeah.
Regressing to the enviable age of 16.
Yeah.
I think it's
yeah.
This is, as West End dressing rooms go, Ryan, quite a nice one.
Thank you very much.
Yeah,
yeah, it's quite spacious.
Huh?
I like it. It's good for the slippers.
I mean, I've got to ask, I didn't see any cards around. They're probably next door.
Yeah.
But, is there one from the man himself?
Oh, there. I mean, this music box over there is from the man himself, and it was handcrafted in Italy.
Wow.
And it's great, and when you open it up, it plays Sherry, and it was just a lovely little gift from Frankie Valli and Bob Gordy. I mean, it was, you know, they're really sweet like that, and they're really lovely guys, and it was a really touching present.
Yeah.
The Ferrari's on its way.
Oh, the Ferrari's, okay. You have to wait a little bit longer for
yeah.
that. I've already commented on the fact that there's more American than Geordie in the accent
yeah.
right now. Is that just living this role, sort of, you know?
I think so. I think when you do it, yeah, you do a role, you definitely start living it. And but when I was at the start of my career, I left Newcastle and went over to live in Los Angeles for 4 years. And while I was over there, I had to get rid of my Geordie accent because I couldn't get a job to save my life. Because every time I open my mouth, they go, "Whoa, where's that from? Where are you? Hold up there, Tex. That's crazy." So I had to get on the Samuel French.
They didn't find it exotic. They didn't, because sometimes the English accent they really go for. But
I think back then it was a bit too broad. They were like, "I've never heard anything like that before." It was like, whoa, they didn't know where I came from. It did sound like, you know, some serpent from some lagoon.
So tell us about the beginnings, Ryan, because,
yeah.
I mean, did the singing come first, or was it the drama, or both together, or when did the bug first bite?
I don't know. I mean, when I was younger, I started watching movies, and I started watching like 70s movies, and growing up with that, you know, kind of thing, you know, the kind of 70s thrillers, like, you know, Steve McQueen and James Coburn and Paul Newman and all those guys, and I was, you know, really captured into that world, and it progressed, and my sister really got me into music and singing, and that kind of like moved on when I was in my kind of teenage years into that, and I really wanted to become a singer, and I went to New York and got into one of those booths in Macy's, and you know, it was like cut your own record,
yeah.
And I did I'm So Excited by the Pointer Sisters, and didn't really work out, the pitching didn't really work out that day, so I thought best get back to the acting, so I went to school and studied, and then I went to drama college and performance arts college in Newcastle, and that went really well, and that gave me some, you know, great tools to, you know, move it to the next level, which I did, and you know, went to Los Angeles, because I got really involved in John Hughes movies, you know, I love that whole world, this fantastic world of, you know, America and Hollywood, where anything seems possible.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time in Newcastle, it was like, it was either, you know, work on the docks or down the mines. So I thought, yeah, let's go for the fancy Dan image. So
yeah,
I went over to LA.
It's funny, I did the same thing myself many years ago. I have some good friends in LA, and I know it pretty well as well.
Yeah.
But what did you do? I mean, how did you go about, you know, looking for work? Did you, I gather you sang in some clubs.
Yeah, it was tough.
That's,
I mean,
pretty
tough.
Brave.
It was tough. I mean, I went over there with $250 worth of traveler's checks given to me by my mother. God bless you.
Oh.
And it was crazy because, you know, it was real fish out of water. You just got there, and I was staying with my sister for a month at this place called the Oakwood Apartments. But while I was there, everyone was coming in for pilot season, you know, and there was a huge complex, and it was just amazing meeting all these people, and they're really up for it, you know what I mean, and they really wanted to go for it, and I'm going to do this, and I was like, wow, this energy is like, you know, it really, you know, really, it's quite intoxicating, and my sister left and went to San Francisco, and I just started, you know, couch surfing, and just kind of went for it, and hung out there, and got a placement at UCLA, and started studying there, and it was great, and entered a talent competition at the Western Bonaventure, and you know, really made that work, and got my agent, got my commercial agent, got my acting agent. It was going great. I was auditioning for, you know, Mally Finn with things like Batman and Penny Marshall movies, and it was, you know, Billy Crystal movies. I was like, yeah, this is great. And it was just at that point when, you know, I was singing clubs down South Central LA.
Yeah, excuse me, South Central LA.
Yeah, I got involved with this, you know, like
how
kind of gang of singers.
You crazy?
Yeah, that was crazy. But it was, the greatest thing is the karaoke competitions down there in South Central are like serious. You know what I mean? It's like third. It's like three different prizes. First is like $100. Second is like $50, and then three is a free meal. So I was hanging out with these great singers, and like they place always, like in the top three. And, you know, so we get fed for nothing. And it was like, oh, you know, it was the way to survive back then. But some of the talent that was, you know, on show out there and these crazy clubs was just phenomenal. Like 70-year-old women just, you know, kind of just going it, you know, would blow Aretha away. And it was like, and then this snaggletooth woman singing in my face, "Hold on, I'm coming." I was like, yeah. It was a real education.
There is a lot of raw talent out there, isn't there?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's kind of in the culture.
And they're so enthusiastic, and that's what, I think that was one of the things that wasn't really going on in Newcastle at the time. I mean, now it's brilliant because it's had, you know, so much money pumped into the, you know, the arts, and, you know, it's had a lot of regeneration. But then it was like kind of quite, you know, quite low, and people were kind of depressed, and it was kind of, you know, nobody really knew where to go. A lot of my friends joined the army, you know, and I just thought, I'm not really into getting shot at, man. I'm going to sing some songs, man. Let's go.
Did have you got any amazing stories from that time in LA? Are there any things that stick out in your memory? Because we all have LA experiences. I mean, I was mugged in LA. I was tied up in an apartment in LA.
Look,
so that
at
was
you.
My and well, a few people said just
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
But you know, my
definitely
my,
if you're talking to people
my,
in the West
my,
End. Yeah.
My friend dined out on it for weeks afterwards, and I was in one of the earthquakes there. So I mean, come on, something must have happened.
Yeah, I was in the big earthquake out there. I was actually I lived
the
in
Northridge the, earthquake.
Yeah,
so
is that the one where Sherman Oaks just fell apart? Yeah, you know, and the hills were on fire.
Pretty
and that was
intense.
Good. Yeah,
4:30 in the morning.
Yeah, that was the
that's
was
the
baby.
Me too.
That was the baby.
Me too.
But yeah, that was great. Yeah, because I actually lived in the I lived in Hollywood, and I was staying in the valley that night. So it was like hell in the valley. No, it all fell apart. But in Hollywood, four CDs fell off my CD rack. That
is
was
that
the,
all?
That's how much it hit there.
Wow.
I was like, right, yeah, pick the wrong place to stay.
I thought the world was coming to an end at that moment.
It was incredible.
It was pretty scary.
It was, yeah.
So, I mean, before Jersey Boys, we're coming to that now, but before Jersey Boys, you did some fairly cutting-edge shows. I mean, Taboo, which a show I love, actually. I wish it had kind of done better than it did.
Yeah.
And strangely enough, it really didn't do anything on the other side of the pond, did it?
I think they just shot too high, you know what I mean? Because it was such a great show, because it was so intimate, and everybody at the venue. I mean, it was great to work with Stephen Ashfield again, but when we were all down there, it was like, you know, this pack of people, and the audience became that pack as well. They became that tribe of people that went to these places like the Taboo and went to, you know, Steve Strange's club and all of this, and everybody was involved in it, and it was like, you know, the bar was there, people could go to the bar and have a drink at the bar, which, you know, scenes would break out there, and it was just unbelievable, and Boy George was, you know, in it playing Barry. I mean, it was, you know, fantastic. It really created that time. I think when it went to New York, it just became too big, and,
yeah,
and the audience were too far away from it, and things that was special about it, that you could actually be inside it and experience that. They really got it right in London.
Mm.
It's just unfortunate that with the venue and with the church being upstairs and you know you know, everybody praying upstairs, and then downstairs it was just like, oh, just men kissing, and it was crap. I don't think they were into that.
And you went from one, I mean, you did Jerry Springer as well,
yeah,
opera, which I remember being completely blown away when I saw it at the National Theatre.
Yeah.
Because I'd heard nothing about it. And I knew vaguely the composer, who I thought was really quite interesting.
Yeah.
But I did not know what to expect. And of course, in the first 2 minutes of the show, it's,
oh, yeah,
revealed, isn't it?
It's great.
You know?
I think it's just a fantastic, fantastic
chorale with dirty words, you know?
It was. I mean, I remember, you know, we were sitting there and we were doing it in rehearsals, and we were at the National Theatre, and you know, they were singing some beautiful opera. I think it was Laurie, it was a fantastic voice, and then she turns around and sings in this beautiful tone, "I hope you die of cancer or from AIDS." And it was just like, okay, this show's there. This show's out there. And, you know, it was just, you know, I want to poop my pants and all this kind of thing. But we had a fantastic time on that. And I mean, again, the energy involved in that. And we were all at the National Theatre. Nobody knew how it was going to go. Nick Heitner was such a great believer in it. And just to hang out in the cafeteria with, you know, like Judy Dench and, you know, Robert Lindsay and Heitner, and you get your little, you know, subsidized cake and hang out with those great people.
You went from ensemble to
yeah.
Yeah,
it was one of those situations where it was like, you know, sometimes you got to go backwards to go forwards, and
yeah,
you know, I was just getting back into the business then, and it was such a great opportunity, and there was no way I was going to let it, you know, pass by, and I just wanted to be involved in that idea and in any way, shape, or form. It's like, you know, Samuel L. Jackson goes, you know, "I don't care, they're doing Star Wars. I'll be Luke Skywalker's slave. I don't care." But it was kind of like that. I was like, yeah, I just got to get in that show. You know, the ensemble was so, you know, heavily featured. And we went on to win an Olivier Award. So
yeah,
That was a great time.
Yeah, it was really an ensemble show.
Never had so much fun being a nurse in all my life. It was strong.
And what about Frankie Goes to Hollywood? I mean, how cool is that?
That was nuts,
yeah. I mean, you went to an open call because they needed a replacement front singer for a while.
Yeah, a friend of mine gave me a call and he says, we're doing this. You fancy coming down? I says, yeah, I'll come down. I've got nothing else to do. I just, moseyed down. And went all the way and, ended up singing for 10,000 people at Wembley Arena. It was a nuts night, hanging out with, Seal and, Grace Jones. Grace Jones grooving away. I was like, yeah. and get kitted out by Alexander McQueen. It was good.
Yeah. What was your, was Frankie and the Four Seasons part of your growing up music at all? Or
it was definitely my mother's. I mean, and that was one of the things when I, started rehearsing and hearing the songs, that I knew them all, knew all the melodies, and it was like, it was so easy to grab a hold of them. It's like, I must have been, she must have been checking them out, when I was in the womb, or I don't know what she was doing, but because she said she was going to actually call my sister Sherry. And then she, she got a bit involved with Mighty Pat and the Rolling Stones and the Beatles.
so
it ended up being Michelle.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, I can tell, I'm already picking up the energy that you're building towards the show.
Yeah.
I mean, what time do you usually get in here to start?
I usually get in quite early, like about 2 or 3 in the afternoon.
And there's things to do. You've got a guitar here.
Yeah, I've got a potter. I've got to putt around,
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I like to do my drawings, my charcoal drawings.
Really?
To prepare.
That's another little...
Yeah, no.
Okay.
Finger paints at the most.
Let's talk about the sound,
yeah.
The Four Seasons sound, and Frankie's sound in particular, because it was a real keynote of the 60s, and I grew up in that era, and that kind of falsetto, Del Shannon, people like that, was just something I grew up hearing.
Yeah.
Is it something you've had to work on and manufacture in your voice, or was it always naturally there, this punchy falsetto?
I give him a nice little touch about saluting within my voice and within the performance that I do, but I'm quite lucky the way the show goes through the entire range, from young to old. It's fantastic. It's a fantastic arc for your voice that you can actually, it doesn't linger in one area too much, where it'll really start to, you strain that area.
Yeah.
Just like, but by the time you're in the second act, you can start bringing in some really nice low qualities. But that top nasal end and to get that going, I mean, it takes a lot of focus and concentration to get that going, but you can really cruise on it and just, it's like a surfer on a wave, because the songs are so beautiful. You just swim in them.
And
if you can just get that down,
there's
got to
be a connection too between that head voice, the falsetto, and the chest. And there's a line in the show where he says, keep working on that B flat in chest.
Yeah.
Which I immediately read. I'm very interested in voices.
Yeah.
And I just thought, that's interesting, because it is that break from, in Walk Like a Man, for example.
Yeah.
That phrase that goes, I'll tell the world, forget about it, girl.
Yeah.
That comes down out of the head voice, and you've really got to punch that in the chest voice. And I notice you do that in the show.
Yeah.
Are you conscious of these, or is it just...
Definitely conscious. But, you don't think about them when you're doing them. You just let it happen naturally. But I think that's, the process of just preparation and building yourself up to that sort of thing. Knowing where to sing in head voice, where to sing in chest voice. Where's the best tone for that kind of thing. And, you can get some, your resonating tones, get those going. You've really got to be thinking all the time, because it's such a difficult role. You can just burn out really easily.
And that's what I was saying, because it sits up there. You've got a sequence of 3 big hits in the show, which are all in that head voice, Sherry and...
I remember in rehearsals when I was going, we're doing the big three.
The big three.
One after the other.
That's a great sequence in the show when Bob Gaudio first arrives on the scene, and you get the hint of the sound and the harmonies for the first time as you're at the piano with him, and you're putting in your own little touches there. That just seemed to me to be so well written. How much time did you spend with Frankie Valli? How many times have you met him? Have you talked technical things at all, or is he just kept away from that?
Yeah, I didn't really talk technical with the V-Man. I talked more, just emotional and just hearing stories about his life, hearing about the guys hanging out and the crazy things that they used to do on tour. I remember Bob Gaudio told me this This one time in the '70s, wearing, you know, mink coats, wearing like Frankie went out and he got himself like a mink coat, like full length, you know, to the floor, and then wanders in the studio with this like, you know, mink on, looking like some pimp daddy Mac. And it was just like, you know, Bob Gordy would wander off and like come back with like, you know, a load of White Castle. And, you know, just the crazy stuff that he used to do is just like, it great. And then, you know, their hair, which would change within the 70s with these fantastic mustaches. I mean, they were just, you know, just white boys that were just going for it. You know, hearts of gold.
Yeah.
And they all of a sudden got all this, you know, money and fame. And they just, you know, they just rode it, man. They were like wild horses.
Did you, it must have been quite pressurized in the sense of when you first... Did you sing for him at all? Did he have to vet the casting?
Yeah, he had to do the full vet. I was flown over to New York, and I was in the studio for 2 hours with Bob. And then the tapes were sent to Frankie and Castle V. So it was just like, you know, and then I was like, so I got through that, Bob loved it. And then I was like, yeah, but we have to wait for the P-Man. We have to wait for the approval. So it was like, you know, it was crazy. It like went to the dark side of the moon for a minute while Frankie just was checking it out. And then it came back, the boy's good. And I was like, all right, yeah, let's get it on.
And what about that first night? I mean, I was here on the first night, and I returned last Friday to see it again. And the audience actually last Friday were kind of fun. I felt the first night audience were actually a little bit staid, which is surprised me, you know, because I'd seen it in New York, and of course, you know, all the New Jersey crowd are in New York and they join in.
Yeah.
And it's just amazing.
I think we had that for the entire, like, the first year was pretty tough because it was nobody really knew what it was. And it was like the Jersey Boys and you know, there was no real expectation about it because it was like, oh, I don't really know what it is. And then, as it became more apparent about it's the story of Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons, okay, some people know who that is, but then as you come to see it and then you find out about, wow, they wrote all of these songs.
These great songs.
They were involved in all of this. They were doing this with the mafia. And then they'll go and tell all their friends, and then obviously it just starts. You know, it just blew up. And now we're getting a lot of people that are coming that are just so into, you know, us as a band, and it's become really feverish about, you know, the first four rows now have become just fans of the show, and then they're just there and they're just watching a concert. They go, yeah, it's great. But everybody that comes to see it just gets involved in this story about these four friends, who, you know, through genius songwriting and amazing friendships, you know, become these legends of rock.
Late in the show, I mean, the number that where you first front the group, Can't Take My Eyes Off You, the number that, you know, is just such an amazing number, but they had such problems with it. It's interesting to me that at that point he's kind of abandoned the falsetto, and now, you know, singing in this punchy.
It's really ballsy.
It really is, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's just, you know, how they become. You know, it's Bob Gordy is just amazing for watching, you know, Frankie as a person and watching how he develops. And I think he's a great, you know, he just observed this entire life and just, you know, painted all these amazing pictures through the music that he did. About, you know, the breakups of his relationships, and, you know, about being on the road and being, you know, lonely and then being, you know, down and out and then coming back through, and it's all, you know, it's all taken care of by this fantastic songwriting as like, you know, the songsmith Bob Gordy, who just wrote about Frankie's life like that. I mean, Frankie was, you know, Bob's perfect subject to do that with, and it's just fantastic how it all just pans out, and it makes a brilliant show. And Des McAnuff really had the talent to, you know, grasp that. And I think it was the time when the great story about Rick Ellis and Marshall Brickman, when they went to see Frankie and they were talking about it, you know, just talking about, you know, putting a show together. And then it comes out with this whole thing that Tommy DeVito stole all this money. And then and you go, well, we had to pay off the debt, you know, and they were like, what? And it was just all these layers that they just uncovered. And it was like, you know, it's just such interesting fellows.
Well, musically, what interests me is the fact that rather like the Beatles, they could have sat and stayed in the safe area, in the safe zone, but they kept moving forward, they kept reinventing themselves, they kept the songwriting changed. And I think it was the same with Bob Gordy as well. You know, he just wanted to develop something a little bit more sophisticated, and certainly Can't Take My Eyes Off You is such an unpredictable song, given what's come before.
It's so weird to sit there, like that was so contemporary and so
really
weird and really out there. And it was like, what?
Yes.
It's just like, you know, some of the, you know, the Beatles on the White Album, the first single off that, it was like when they were using distorted guitars, they was like, whoa, what's wrong with this record? This is crazy. And it's just amazing how opinions have changed at the time. But I mean, it is, I mean, you hear Can't Take My Eyes Off You, it's the perfect pop song, you know what I mean? It's just absolutely fantastic with that great brass riff and that amazing chorus. I mean, it's got everything. And yeah, record companies saying, you know, and their wisdom, you know, that's obviously too alternative.
Well, they weren't ready for it. I mean, they just, that's the problem.
That's the thing.
Very often these record company executives, they're not musical.
Mm.
And they don't understand when something is goes out on a limb or, you know, they just don't. Tell us, I mean, have you got a favourite moment in the show? Have you got a favourite song in the show? Because I know my most affecting moment in the show, and I'm just curious to know whether it might be yours.
I don't know. It's difficult because there's so many great parts of the show. Like, we're all together in the big three numbers. It's a fantastic moment because it's so, you know, we're there on stage and everything's going great and the friendships is all at the high and everything's great. You know what I mean? And it's great to be involved in that, to feel that, to be in a hit band and to have your friends around you and go, we're just great, aren't we? It's just brilliant. This is all going, but we're twisting and people are loving us. This is great. And to have those feelings, it's unbelievable. But also in the second act, when, you know, he had everything and lost it, and then to do something like Can't Take My Eyes Off You and then Working My Way Back to You, it, you know, it's fantastic. And also beautiful moments like, I mean, I love, one of my favorite songs to sing you know, I love singing Fallen Angel, and I love singing My Eyes Adored You.
Oh, that's the one.
That's definitely
me.
The moment.
Oh,
it's
touching in the show, but it's such a beautiful song.
Yeah, I mean, it's just incredible, that song, and it's a lovely song to sing, and it comes at that time, and it's a really nice place in my voice, and it's a great moment.
What about this choreography, Ryan?
This is the bit that I love.
It's the power move. I don't know why I'm doing it. You should be doing it. You
know? I know, it's the Sergio Trujillo power move. But it's great. We were like talking, we want to go on like MTV and go on Celebrity Deathmatch, you know what I mean? And take that. And we bring out, you know, they'll do their whatevers, and we'll come with our strong two steps.
So when are we getting the Ryan Malloy album? Because, you know, it's a little bit frustrating that they're selling the Broadway cast out front.
It's crazy out there. But I mean, I've got a record out on my website in the minute on ryanmalloy.com. So I mean, that's, you know, I've got, you know, 10 songs, you know, that I've written with a friend of mine, Pat Gribben. We've been writing together. So, you know, that's a nice little vibe of mine out there. But yeah, they keep asking us all the time when we're going to do, you know, the London cast album. And I don't know. I mean, I think we share, there's a fantastic audience for it. And the English people with the Four Seasons have always been cheated, you know, I believe, because they never really got the opportunity to get the most out of them. Because, you know, with touring and records and everything else, and the fan base here was, you know, phenomenal. Everybody was into them.
Yeah.
And I think, yeah, a cast album would really, you know, set the record straight.
Mm. And I hear you have unfinished business in the States. I mean, is it true that you might do the show over there?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of talk about it. And I'd love to do the show over there. And it'd be great to get back to Broadway, you know, hit there. And because my sister lives in New York, so it'd be all nice.
Oh, does she?
Yeah,
oh, right.
Nice and local. But I'm going over in next week,
yeah.
Flying over, man, hit the Virgin, get over there and, you know, see her and hang out. And yeah, I'll see the show and go, yeah, they need us. They need us over here.
That is a great city.
Yeah, right,
so
it really is.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Your
Nave.
Vocal warm-up will take
right
us on stage in 5 minutes.
Right,
that's vocal warm-up
right
on stage.
It's
in
your
warm-up. Thank you.
You've got to keep going,
it's,
baby.
It's been good, Ryan.
Oh, thank you so much for
thank
your time.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Cheers.